We start with an unemployed, overweight actor in his 50s who was briefly famous in the 1980s, but these days can't even get an audition. Before you think I'm being really rude about my next guest, Richard Thorncroft is a fictional character in the new film Mindhorn. He was invented by Julian Barrett, one half of the comedy duo behind The Mighty Boosh, and Horrible Histories star Simon Farnby. Thorncroft is not unlike Alan Partridge or David Brent. His deluded sense of importance comes from the fact that he once played a TV detective in a popular primetime TV series set on the Isle of Man.
In 1983, Special Agent Bruce P. Mindhorn was captured during a secret operation on the Siberian border. Communist doctors performed experimental cybernetic surgery upon him. They removed his eye and replaced it with a super-advanced optical lie detector, which meant he could literally see the truth. Bruce Mindhorn became the best plainclothes detective the Isle of Man had ever seen. You can't hide the truth from Mindhorn.
The film opens with a suspected killer ringing the Isle of Man police station and refusing to speak to anyone but the fictional detective. So the police track down the actor and ask him to help, with farcical results. Simon Farnaby and Julian Barrett, who wrote and star in the film, explained where the idea came from.
Mindhorn came from Simon and I, who were at the time drinking buddies, and we were really interested in Bergerac, $6 Million Man, and we just thought it'd be great to do something like that. My childhood was the $6 Million Man. I would just watch that, and that was the
my childhood
of my
was
week.
Bergerac.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's all I watched, which is slightly weirder than $6 Million Man.
A bit, yeah. But we wanted to combine the two.
What was the attraction, do you think, of Bergerac?
It seemed very exotic. John Nettles thought it was really cool. Glamorous, you know, women locations, and locations
golf,
and
yachts,
golf
basically
courses.
Basically your life.
I've tried to make my life as much into Bergerac as possible.
And there are lots and lots of nods to Bergerac and, indeed, John Nettles. It's almost an homage, isn't it?
I don't know about an homage. It's more of an affectionate parody of certain elements of Bergerac. Yeah. But he's also got a science fiction element. He's got a robotic eye that can see the truth. We imagined it was a show that was made in the wake of Bergerac on the Isle of Man. So Isle of Man had never had its Bergerac, and they were angry, and they wanted their own Bergerac. So that's what this was. But then they thought they went too far, and they'd given a robotic eye. It doesn't really hold water as a show itself, because if you think about it, a detective with an eye that can see the truth, the episodes are over quite quick.
It was the oyster farmer, and then it's all finished. You have to invent ways of sort of making his eye malfunction.
Exactly.
The main sort of breakthrough and that led us away from the parody was more about the actor, and so it became more about his relationship with the show, but also his sort of career and
his career nosedive since the show finished. Yeah, yeah. And I think the crucial sort of idea was way back, this idea of a phone call from a suspect to the police asking to speak to Detective Mindhorn. We thought if someone had rung Jersey police asking to speak to Bergerac, would the police have got John Nettles to try and help snare this suspect? So, and you talked to a police.
Yeah, I did.
A policeman?
I spoke to a police chief.
You say research, it was when you were arrested.
I was arrested for... I did, and he said, genuinely, he said, yeah, if the actor was up for it, we would get him over for the call, you know, in the secure police station, and if it would help lure him in. But, of course, what we do is he sees it as an opportunity to relaunch his career.
I actually wanted to talk to you about the press conference. I'm willing to front that. We could co-host, but I'm camera-trained, and sometimes in these things police can come across as a bit weird and sweaty-looking.
Mr. Thorncroft, you are aware of the seriousness of the situation.
Big time, yes, indeed. We'll hash out the details of that later. Is there a dressing room?
I love the costumes. Mindhorn costumes, huge moustache, toupee, overly tight trousers, very nasty orange leather jacket over a polo neck. Meanwhile, your character, Simon, Clive the stuntman, doesn't wear very many clothes. You must have had fun coming up with the looks.
The sort of Mindhorn look we had quite early on, didn't we? Powder blue slacks and
The slip-on shoes, the roll neck sweater, the symphony in beige.
When it became clear I was going to play Clive, all we wanted was him to be a nightmare for Julian's character. So he had to be sort of slim and a very tanned, and amazing bouffant hair, because Richard's bald.
But I bulked up for the part, yes, very professional in that way.
You can take it off, though, now.
You are allowed to do that. Maybe a reshoot coming, who knows?
Finish filming.
We might not have, it's not finished until it's finished.
As well-known comedy actors like Steve Coogan, your cast includes members of Britain's classical acting elite. You've got Harriet Walter, Simon Callow and Kenneth Branagh on board. How did that come about?
I think because it's about actors, this script. We sent out the script to actors.
You sent it out to Binmen first.
You don't get much
really
response. So the actors really responded. We thought, this is a much better tack. because we were setting up the acting business. I think they really responded well to it, and they seemed to get on board quite easily, and we were quite surprised. Because we wrote Kenneth Branagh into the script not as a joke, but we just thought, this is who we want, but let's just call him Kenneth Branagh instead of...
We thought we would have to change it, yeah. You know, when we couldn't get him to Ben Kingsley or someone like that.
He auditions you for a part in one of his plays.
I am my own man. I am Clifton of Port Antonio. Do you feel me?
Yeah, it's incredible. That's literally incredible.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Really, I mean, I don't know what to say, but thank you.
I want to try something. I'd like to do it again, but this time I'd like to try it with a brogue.
I think we're good. We've got everything. I've really seen everything I could possibly want.
You sure?
Oh, yeah.
Okay. But he was up for doing it because the director, Sean Foley, knew Kenneth.
Sean Foley, of course, has an amazing track record of directing farce and comedy for stage, but not film. So what did he bring to the project?
Yeah, it's true. Kenneth Branagh. you know, we were big fans of his from the stage. You know, I saw the play what I wrote, I think, three times. And he knows comedy, and that's what he said to us. He went, look, you know, I'll throw myself into it. And he's incredibly passionate about learning how to do it. And he went, I know comedy, and I'll just film the comedy. And we went, OK, that sounds fair enough.
Mm. I mean, your character, Richard Thornycroft, takes himself very seriously as an actor, and he has to have the right shoes to get into character, doesn't he?
Yes.
I mean, where did these actorly practices come from?
David Suchet.
mainly, we did listen to a lot of interviews with actors, and there's some quite funny ones. I mean, I went to drama school.
Yes, I learned on the streets of Leeds. I'm just a sort of homeschooled, much more rough and tumble. You were trained by
Pops. I sought the advice of professionals. I had a drama teacher who would sort of go, you know, the most important decision you can make as an actor is the shoes your character wears, because they're the very soul of the character, literally, because they connect him with the ground, they ground him. But you did get into shoes.
Didn't have the right shoes on one take. It was a mid-shot, so it wasn't going below my knees, but I still didn't have the right shoes on. So I said, I can't do this without... Can you get the character shoes in? And I went, oh, my gosh, I'm becoming him.
He's both pitiful and ridiculous, because he's got no self-awareness, has he?
No, and I think good comedy characters shouldn't have that, really, hopefully.
Or have a large sort of blind spot.
Yes.
That is sort of all his vision.
Own making.
This was the great irony of the character that he played, you know, was a guy who could see the truth. And it's that sort of schism between the actor and who he plays that we always found quite funny.
I understand that at one point a major American star expressed an interest in making it on condition that the action was relocated to the United States and that he would play the lead.
We can't talk
this
about
this is something we can't...
We can't talk about Jim Carrey.
...mention Jim Carrey, but no, Jim Carrey came
Jim Carrey,
and knocked on our door.
We can't mention him, but we
can't say who it is, but...
Basically, you hear the rumours...
Jim is very,
Jim,
very excited
Jim is
and
excited.
Interested.
Jim is in love with this project.
Jim has not read the script.
Yeah, Jim's people will have thought this could be an idea for Jim, and so let's tell them that Jim wants to do it. This is what we thought. It was a fun afternoon to even just flirt with that idea.
Now, in Richard Thorncroft's scummy bedsit, we see an LP that he's recorded in his heyday. Is that a prop, or are the real songs?
There's a real EP called You Can't Handcuff the Wind.
Found it in a garage in Romford.
They've cleaned it up and they've put it out, and it's available. Mm. And it's an erotic power ballad. You can't handcuff the wind. If you do, you're going to fail. It's like trying to put thunder in jail. That's just a little
song.
It's quite steamy.
The moon was hot, the time was right, and you were looking so good. Our body heat was rising, I thought you understood. We had some fun together, but I never promised you forever.
It's not my style.
No, no, no. You can't handcuff the wind, and if you try, you're gonna fail.
Well, I must ask about the brilliant Mighty Boosh, because that was a huge multimedia success, radio and TV series, stage shows, and a book. Noel Fielding is now one of the new Great British Bake Off presenters. There have been rumours, though, of a Mighty Boosh film. Could that happen, do you think?
Yes. It could happen. Noel's at the moment just really into baking. But he always was into baking. That's the crazy thing about it.
Really?
I never really understood at the time. He was just constantly baking.
Well, when you did Mighty Boosh, did
most
he come
of the
in
time,
with cakes?
Just covered in flour and just different recipes he was excited about. Yeah, when he's done with baking, Maybe we can think about something, the mighty Bake Off.
Mighty Bake Off Bush.
I need to get into some sort of culinary programme.
You're more sort of gardening. Yeah, playing records and doing gardening. And yeah, that was meatloaf. And now, turnips. When is the right time of year to plant?
I think a jazz gardening programme is the sort of thing you could sell to Radio 4.
I like that.
A jazz gardener.
Planting bulbs and sowing beets.
Julian Barrett and Simon Fonopy and Mindhorn is out this Friday, 5th of May, Certificate 15.